And from Master's Whispers from Eternity, number 59. Teach me, O Spirit, not to discern the laws of virtue with dread, but with love. Teach me to remember that virtue, though sometimes difficult to follow at the start, becomes easy and self-fulfilling when I obey its laws and adorns me finally with thy laurel of happiness. Teach me to remember that evil, though it promises a little pleasure at the beginning, always brings great sorrow in the end. Teach me to love the ways of virtue, which guide me to my own higher interest and highest good. Help me to shun vicious actions, which is ever injurious to my true interest. Implant in me those wholesome habits which enable me always to perceive virtuous ways as more charming than vicious ones. Help me to remember that virtue, though sometimes bitter tasting at first, becomes nectar eventually, and that evil, though its taste seems sweet at the beginning, becomes poison at the end. That's one of the whispers that I remember from the very beginning of my spiritual life, when I was trying to sort out, as we all do, what part of us gets to go with us on the journey to God and what part of it gets to get left behind. And it seems so simple at the very beginning somehow, at least when one's knowledge is only intellectual and not so much life experience. And this is why Arjuna asked Krishna the question, what is it that impels us? Because the difference between what we know might be admirable and bright and beneficial and helpful and what we are able to carry out, there's often this huge discrepancy. And Arjuna also writes it, what compels us seeming against our better judgment, even when we're standing firm and clear? You know, this time I'm not going to get angry. This time I'm not going to speak sharply. This time I'm going to leave half of the ice cream in the carton. You know, whatever it might be, this time is going to be different than all the times that came before. So it's not as if we ourselves think it's a good idea, but we find ourselves compelled. And Krishna gives a very simple answer, simple to express in words, not even that hard to understand. Desire, attachment, anger. This is what compels us. We start with desire. It's really simple. I want it. But I want it. Excuse me, but I want it. I mean, we see little children behave that way. They have absolute fits, you know. I want it, but I want it, but I want it. And then we're much more, adult-seeming about it. But the impulse is not so very different, is it? And it's really, really confusing. It's really confusing on the most fundamental level because the world is inconveniently arranged for us to really understand where our happiness lies, what really causes us suffering, and what the heck God had in mind by making the whole thing in the first place. It's just impossible from an ordinary perspective. Much more, to speak a little bit more seriously for a moment, not that I'm not, but more grimly, I make it a habit not to read a lot of news. It's not that I'm uninformed. You can stay informed with just headlines and a glance every now and then. I don't go very deeply into it. Swami once said, reading the news is like listening to a lot of gossip. It's just things that you hear that you can't do anything about. So there's a certain element. Okay? Is that back again? Over the last few days, those of you who follow international news understand that in the country of Afghanistan, some very, very, very challenging things are beginning to happen. And being a global village as we are now, a friend has a friend who's a woman college professor in Kabul, and all of a sudden a prayer request was going through the Ananda world and across my desk for this woman and her family, because her position is going to become exceedingly difficult. And it's not easy, because now thousands of people are trying to leave that country. Millions of refugees are moving all over the planet. Every established, relatively stable country in the world is having enormous challenges at its borders, including ours. Who is allowed in? Who is not allowed in? At what point do we have to be practical in our idealism? I'm really not interested in that discussion so much. And then, of course, there's just ongoing political issues in the USA with the way government is run and the selfishness that passes for public service. It's a long story. And simultaneously with this, Julie Hilburn was kind enough to send around a little short excerpt from a longer film about astronauts going to outer space and seeing planet Earth and the profound mystical experiences that many of them had when they were able to step away enough from our ordinary preoccupations to see it from a bigger perspective. And there are lots of, in this little film, there's lots of, the film it comes from is called Planetary. It's really very interesting to watch. It ends up having to do with attunement to nature and many other very fine qualities. But in the process, you see constant, all these pictures taken from space of the Earth and the way it moves and the way the weather moves around it and the oceans and the land and all of this. And you see what is the truth of it. It's a living organism, completely interrelated, and there's no place where you can carve it off and say that this piece can operate independently from this piece, these people can operate independently from that, this ocean is unrelated to that. It all comes out into a seamless whole, which is why those who have the experience of seeing it suddenly realize that everything I've been taught is somewhat wrong. Or perhaps everything I've been taught is wrong. You know, just the natural, instinctive way this world is organized for personal aggrandizement is just simply mistaken. But not just minorly wrong, profoundly, unbelievably, compellingly awful. When I think of this woman who has a family and her own life, and you know that these forces are moving in that have the intention of taking away from her everything that she spent her life building up, you can't help but ask the question, why? Why would one group of human beings who are fundamentally like us, who have friends and have mothers and fathers and wives and husbands, children, what is it that gets into their minds that makes them think that this is a good idea? And yet, in the world we live in right now, it's going on all around us. That's why I don't read the news very much. I do also receive the good news one, and I read the Far Side cartoons every morning. That's really my favorite part of the morning, and can be heard laughing out loud by myself in my room, because his perspective, although bizarre, I admit, it's bizarre, but it also strikes me as funny a great deal of the time, because it steps outside the normal way of looking at things. Well, we come to the path of self-realization because of this compelling Well, I don't even know how to describe it. I was driven from a young age to find an answer that made more sense than the one that the people around me were offering me. And I was gifted, and it can only have been, I understand now, from countless lifetimes of bashing my head against wrong ways of living and finally noticing that it didn't actually work. That whereas the ways of vicious action look like they're going to bring me what I want, the self-restraint of virtue is actually the only path to happiness. But all of us, as we were given this free will by God to conduct the experiment, and we're on a planet now where people are conducting the experiment on many different levels of trying to understand what is happiness and what is sorrow, what produces right living, what leads in the end to disappointment. Because the fascinating thing about this story that we're in is that it ends. Everybody's life comes to an end, except for Babaji and a few of the others who figured something out that we don't know. But all the rest of us, we will just work as hard as we can to make it permanent, just the way we want it. And at one point or another, it's just over. And nowadays, everybody going out of their bodies and then coming back bring back this incredibly interesting news that none of it is what we thought it was. That the whole purpose of what we're doing has almost nothing to do with what we're doing and only has to do with how we're doing it. What consciousness do we have? And the simplest question of all, how much have we loved? How much have we given of ourselves in the care and the upliftment of others? And this is the confusion. This is the fundamental confusion. We seem to think that if I get more of what I want, I will have more of what I want. But what we want is not really what is truly our own nature. Now, I can't answer the question as to why God made it so hard. When Swamiji asked Master why, whether or not we always reincarnate on Earth, once we become Earthlings, do we stay Earthlings? You know, just in the astral world, we just come shooting back to this planet? Master laughed at the question. He said, there's countless material worlds that we can go to, countless inhabited planets. And then he said, if we just came back to the same planet every time, we would find out too fast. That's what Master said to Swami. Swami thought to himself, why would that be bad? Isn't that exactly what we're looking for? But there's this strange fact about life, and we can rebel against it. We can be angry at God. We can make up philosophical systems that make it different. It doesn't make any difference. That's all part of how we spend our time, waste our time. Is that ultimately we have to accept that there are powerful divine laws that govern us. And all of us have experienced the answer to the question of today's sermon, is there such a thing as Satan? Yes, that's the answer. There you have it. You don't have to call it Satan. You can call it Maya. You can call it the devil. You can call it your own subconscious impulses. Call it whatever you want. The fact is, we are constantly being pulled in two directions. And one direction is expansive and uplifting, but requires commitment, requires energy, requires self-sacrifice, requires a certain amount of faith, all sorts of things we would rather not have to put out. And the other one just entices us to indulge. Wherever the energy is flowing, just go that way. And there's all these justifications. God made us this way. He wouldn't have made us this way if he didn't want us to do this, if we're thinking about God at all. But by their fruits, you shall know them. That's what Jesus answered in the Bible when people said, how can you tell the true prophet from the false, the true teaching from the false? By their fruits. How does it work for you? How does it work for you? What is the result? And this is where this mystery begins to set in, and no one can answer it. No one, unless they have God realization, can answer it, as the best answer to that is, in order to understand the ways of God, you have to have the consciousness of God, which is what we're working to get, but don't necessarily have. I found it so mysterious when I finally met Swamiji that I had this overwhelming, unresistible, compelling need to find out what the secret of happiness was. This is from childhood. What is really going on here? It was joy that I wanted. It was truth that I wanted. Nobody seemed to know it. I found finally a few books. And then when I saw Swami Kriyananda for the first time, literally, he walked in the door of the place where I was sitting. I do not know how I knew, but I knew. And it came to me like this. He knows. He knows. He's living in such a way that happiness, joy, freedom, I had lots of words later, that will be the result. I've never seen it manifest. By that time, I knew dimly it was theoretically possible. But he manifested it. How do you know? It just emanates, and it still emanates. The loss of the physical body doesn't change that emanation because it was never dependent. It was never physical. All the masters on the altar, you tune into their consciousness, and what you feel is freedom, that they are not compelled against their will to do that which does not bring happiness, like Arjuna and the rest of us. What drives us? They do not desire that which is not from their higher self. They are not attached to that which is not from our higher self. And they certainly are not loss of it. What is there to be angry about? What is being thwarted? I wish to hurt myself, and I don't do it. I'm happy about it. I'm not angry about it. We just reach a point, and all of you in this room, you wouldn't be sitting here if at least some part of us wasn't ready. Some part of us is ready to undergo the arduous effort, because there is an other, there isn't another pull, which we all feel. We know we want to go this way, and a piece of us wishes that we didn't have to. Just as simple as that. And that's the satanic force, because it's pulling us away from where true joy lies. And we have to simply learn to be strong in our resistance to it, because not because of dogma, not because of fear, not because some authority has told us we have to, but because within our own selves we know that the ways of virtue bring happiness. And when we turn away from that, we suffer. And all these people in the world sharing this planet with us, it's a very tough time to be a human being on this particular planet if you're moving toward the light, because we are profoundly and deeply and continuously challenged by this other force which is pulling away from the light. There's no such thing as darkness, really. There is, because everywhere there is light, but wrong thinking, wrong action casts a shadow. Master often speaks of it as light and shadow. We tend to think of it, he says it in, as light and shade in the poem Samadhi. Vanish the veils of light and shade. Shade is what's there when the light is blocked. And this is where the final joyous answer comes, because if we answer too strongly the idea of Satan's presence in our life, we can become extremely depressed. But the teaching presents it to us, that all thoughts are vibrations of consciousness that always exist. And that the idea that happiness lies in the shadow away from the light is simply an emanation that's in the universe. And the deep understanding that true joy comes when we attune to a greater reality, is always emanating in the universe. More personally, I find it more magnetic to realize that the great masters are always sending that thought out, always. And when Master was living in his physical body and Swami Kriyananda was there living with him, and on more than one occasion, Master showed Swamiji that he was completely conscious of everything that ever happened to Swami, every thought that he thought. When Swami expressed, surprise, when Master spoke exactly about something that had happened at a great distance away from him, Swami said, you knew I had that conversation. Master said, I know every thought that you think. I mean, it's impossible, really, for us from our human perspective. Swamiji, once when we were visiting in Disneyland, of all places, where there were hundreds of all kinds of people there with us in Disneyland, he looked out at all the different people in that exceedingly diverse environment, and he said, imagine. He said, not merely loving all these people, and he gave us a few seconds to kind of try that one on to see how far we could get. He said, but actually imagine being every one of these individuals. Being as much inside their consciousness as you are inside your own. Swami said, this was Master's state of consciousness. Because the final answer to all of this is there is only light, and occasionally we put something opaque in front of it so we can't see it. But when the opaqueness is removed, all that's left is the light of God. And this is what Master and Babaji and Jesus Christ and Buddha and Krishna and Swamiji, all of these great souls are constantly emanating this thought, just waiting for us to achieve it, to receive. We don't have to suffer. We don't have to struggle. We don't have to be miserable. We do have to have lots of experiences that we wish we didn't have. Our desires do get thwarted, just like a little child's desires get thwarted. What loving mother would let the child have everything it wants? Children don't know what's good for them. They just know what they want. Does that sound a little familiar? You know? But the loving mother is very, very attentive. You know, the best parents are very attentive. They're fair. They're kind. But they're also very definite. No, I'm really sorry. I remember I watched I have never raised children. My sister with her son when he was about six. And he was very strong-willed, very articulate in his desires. And he was trying to persuade my sister that an alternative plan would be better. And she looked at him very kindly but very definitely and said, when I speak to you like this, have I ever changed my mind? He thought and said, no, she said, and I'm not going to change it now. And we can argue all we want with Divine Mother. No, this time, this will make me happy. But the good news is Divine Mother loves us too much. She loves us too much. And it breaks a mother's heart to see her children weep and wail. But she won't give in. When I speak to you like this, am I ever going to change my mind? No. I love you too much. And we have a choice. We always have a choice. We always have a choice as to which dimension of reality we're going to choose, because the shade is always telling us, come to this side. And the planet right now, there's lots of people all over, and lots of them have lots of power. They either have power of money or power of position or power of guns, or they have lots of power. and they're getting to test out. You know, how far can I go into the shadow and will it make me happy? And it seems like a good idea to them or else they wouldn't be doing it. And those of us who are more conscious of the light get to find out at what point do we become frightened? At what point do we no longer believe that God is in charge? At what point do we no longer have the power to stand calm and strong in our relationship with the divine? That's what we're doing here. That's what everyone is doing here. But those of us with some awareness of why we're here, at what point are we compelled, seemingly against our will, swept up by desire, becoming attached to an outcome, becoming angry and sad when that outcome isn't brought to us, forgetting for the moment that Divine Mother is in charge and always loves us? St. Paul says in the Bible, perfect love casts out all fear. Our perfect love of God and Guru, our trusting love of God and Guru, our capacity to receive that love, that's the perfection we're seeking. Because when we live with certainty in that power of infinite love, then why would we be afraid of anything? Oh, that's right, desire, attachment, and anger, I forgot. But why? This is our life assignment. This is what it's for. When we reach the end, so great souls have told us, we meet the masters and the masters say, how much have you loved? Do you love me? Swamiji said, when he meets Master, and now he has, at the end of his life, he said he expects Master to ask him one question, how much have you loved me? Swami's answer, he said, will be, with all my heart, sir, with all my heart. God bless you.
Life is a dream, time like a stream. Carries our burdens away. Never despair, joys everywhere. Love can befriend you today. Free from all care, like birds on the air, soar above griefs and worries, seek joy and be great. On and on earth, wings of great worry ambitions depart. Sometimes a friend helps us ascend from life's cares to the sky. Love is a star, though shining afar. It can guide us and help us toward light to draw nigh. Love is a star, though shining afar. It can guide us and help us.